Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present Columbia Episode 2, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 5, The Birth of a Nation, Gran Colombia and Its Collapse. With independence secured through the heroic efforts of Simón Bolívar and his revolutionary army, Colombia entered a new era, one filled with both promise and uncertainty. The dream of a unified South American republic materialized in Gran Colombia, 1819 to 1831, a political entity encompassing modern-day Colombia, Venezuela, Ecuador, and Panama. This vast and ambitious nation, forged through war and the ideals of liberty, faced immediate challenges that would ultimately lead to its dissolution. Political divisions, regionalism, and conflicting visions of governance would test the fragile unity of this new republic, highlighting the growing pains of a nation striving to define itself in the aftermath of colonial rule. The formation of Gran Colombia. The establishment of Gran Colombia was one of Bolívar's grandest aspirations. Influenced by the ideals of the Enlightenment and inspired by revolutionary movements across the Atlantic, Bolívar envisioned a united South America capable of standing strong against European imperial ambitions. The Congress of Angostura, 1819, laid the foundation for this federation, appointing Bolívar as president and Francisco de Paula Santander as vice president. Bogotá was chosen as the capital, symbolizing the region's political and strategic importance. However, this union was not a seamless one. Gran Colombia was an immense territory, with distinct regional identities and economic interests. Venezuela and Ecuador harbored grievances against the centralized power in Bogotá, while internal conflicts between Bolívar's vision of a strong, centralized government and Santander's preference for federalism sowed discord among the leadership. The challenges of governance. Governing Gran Colombia proved to be an immense task. While Bolívar sought to implement reforms that would unify the disparate regions, the lack of infrastructure, communication, and administrative cohesion hindered the government's efficiency. The new republic was deeply indebted from the Wars of Independence, and securing financial stability was a constant struggle. Bolívar's political philosophy leaned toward a strong executive branch, fearing that excessive democracy would lead to disorder. However, his autocratic tendencies alienated many who had fought alongside him for liberty. The 1821 Constitution of Cúcuta attempted to strike a balance between federalism and centralized control. It abolished slavery, established suffrage, albeit limited, and aimed to create a uniform legal system. Yet, its implementation faced resistance, particularly from the provinces that feared Bogotá's dominance. The ideological divide between Bolívar and Santander further exacerbated tensions, leading to internal political strife. Economic and social struggles. The new republic inherited a fragmented economy. While the fertile valleys of Colombia and Venezuela had immense agricultural potential, trade networks were underdeveloped, and the devastation of war had left industries in ruins. The mining sector, once a major contributor to colonial Spain's wealth, was in decline due to labor shortages and mismanagement. Additionally, the abolition of slavery, while a monumental step toward human rights, disrupted plantation economies reliant on enslaved labor. Socially, the newly independent state grappled with profound inequalities. While Creole elites took charge of the government, indigenous and Afro-Colombian populations continued to face marginalization. The promises of liberty and equality made during the Wars of Independence did not immediately translate into meaningful reforms for the lower classes, sowing further divisions within the republic. The fragmentation of Gran Colombia. By the mid-1820s, cracks in the Union had become evident. Venezuela, led by José Antonio Páez, resisted Bogotá's authority, advocating for greater regional autonomy. In Ecuador, dissatisfaction with centralized rule grew, culminating in movements to break away from Gran Colombia. Meanwhile, Bolívar's increasing reliance on dictatorial measures alienated his former allies, and his dream of a lasting federation began to unravel. Bolívar's final attempt to preserve unity came in 1828, when he declared himself dictator, in an effort to prevent further fragmentation. However, this move was met with outrage. An assassination attempt on Bolívar in Bogotá that same year signified the deep resentment against his rule. As Bolívar's health deteriorated and his political influence waned, the inevitable dissolution of Gran Colombia loomed. By 1830, Venezuela and Ecuador had formally seceded, leaving New Granada, modern Colombia and Panama, as the last remnant of Bolívar's vision. Heartbroken and disillusioned, Bolívar resigned from power and withdrew from public life. He died in Santa Marta in December 1830, a man whose dreams of continental unity had crumbled before his eyes. The aftermath and legacy. The dissolution of Gran Colombia did not mean the end of its legacy. The ideological struggles between centralism and federalism, which had characterized its brief existence, would continue to shape Colombia's political landscape for decades. The collapse of the Union also led to a period of instability, as New Granada struggled to define its path forward as an independent nation. Despite its failure, Gran Colombia remains a symbol of the unity that Bolívar once hoped to achieve. The dream of a consolidated Latin America, free from foreign domination, continues to inspire political thought in the region to this day. The struggles faced by Gran Colombia served as a lesson for future leaders, illustrating both the potential and the challenges of governance in a post-colonial world. As Colombia transitioned into a new phase, the questions of nationhood, governance, and identity remained at the forefront. In the next chapter, we will explore the turbulent political transformations of the 19th century, the rise of new political factions, and the path toward defining what it meant to be Colombian in the years following the collapse of Bolívar's great experiment. Chapter 6: A Land Divided, Civil Wars and Political Turmoil. With the dissolution of Gran Colombia in 1831, the territory of modern-day Colombia, now known as the Republic of New Granada, entered a prolonged period of political instability, regional rivalries, and ideological conflicts that would define much of the 19th century. The struggles between centralists and federalists, conservatives and liberals, economic interests, and religious influences led to a series of civil wars that shaped the nation's evolving identity. These divisions not only hindered national unity, but also left a lasting impact on Colombia's political and social structures, with the scars of these conflicts lingering well into the 20th century. The rise of New Granada and the Federalist struggles. After the collapse of Gran Colombia, New Granada emerged as a fragile state, struggling to define its governing principles. The early years were marked by debates over centralization versus federalism. Centralists, led primarily by the Conservative Party, sought a strong, unified government based in Bogotá with control over economic and social policies. In contrast, Federalists, later organized under the Liberal Party, advocated for greater autonomy among the provinces, fearing that a powerful central government would lead to tyranny. The tensions escalated into outright conflict during the War of the Supremes, 1839 to 1841, the first of many civil wars that plagued Colombia throughout the 19th century. The conflict was sparked by a seemingly minor dispute over the closure of convents, but it quickly escalated into a broader struggle between provincial leaders, supremes, and the central government. The war ended with a centralist victory, reinforcing Bogotá's authority, but failing to resolve the deep-seated political rivalries that would continue to simmer beneath the surface. The rise of the liberal-conservative divide. By the mid-19th century, two dominant political factions had emerged: the conservatives and the liberals. Their ideological battles would define the course of Colombian politics for generations. The Conservative Party, founded in 1849, was rooted in the values of strong central authority, the influence of the Catholic Church, and the protection of traditional social hierarchies. The Liberal Party, established in 1848, championed individual freedoms, economic liberalization, and secular governance, advocating for the reduction of church influence in state affairs. This ideological divide led to multiple conflicts, notably the Colombian Civil War of 1851, where the conservative elite, opposed to the abolition of slavery, attempted to overthrow the liberal-led government. The liberals triumphed, but their victory deepened resentment among the ruling class, setting the stage for future conflicts. the radical changes of the mid-19th century. One of the most transformative periods in Colombian history came in 1853, when a new liberal constitution was enacted, promoting free trade, decentralization, and religious tolerance. However, the shift toward federalism and increased provincial autonomy alarmed the conservatives, leading to another civil war, culminating in the Federal War, 1860-1862. Led by Tomás Cipriano de Mosquera, the liberal forces succeeded in dismantling centralist control, resulting in the creation of the United States of Colombia, 1863-1886, a highly decentralized republic where individual states wielded immense power. While federalism allowed greater regional control, it also weakened national unity and made the country vulnerable to internal divisions and economic instability. Frequent conflicts between states, coupled with weak central authority, created a power vacuum that both liberals and conservatives sought to exploit. The return of conservatism and the regeneration era. By the late 19th century, disillusionment with the federalist system led to calls for a stronger central government. In 1886, under the leadership of conservative President Rafael Núñez, the Federal Republic was abolished, and the Republic of Colombia was officially established. This marked the beginning of the regeneration period characterized by the reinstatement of a strong central government, the Catholic Church regaining influence over education and public life, the reversal of many liberal economic and social reforms. Though the regeneration era brought a semblance of stability, it also stifled political dissent and increased tensions between the two major parties, setting the stage for one of the bloodiest conflicts in Colombian history. The Thousand Days War, 1899-1902. The Thousand Days War, Colombia's deadliest civil conflict. The liberal-conservative rivalry reached its peak in 1899, when the liberals, frustrated with the dominance of conservative policies, launched an armed rebellion that escalated into a nationwide civil war. Over 3 years, the conflict claimed the lives of an estimated 100,000 Colombians, devastating towns and plunging the country into economic ruin. The war ended with a conservative victory, but the damage was profound. The conflict left the economy in shambles, increased resentment between political factions, and weakened Colombia's ability to maintain control over its territories. The immediate aftermath of the war saw increasing instability, leading to one of the most significant geopolitical losses in Colombia's history. The secession of Panama in 1903, backed by U.S. interests eager to construct the Panama Canal. The aftermath and long-term impact. The civil wars of the 19th century had a lasting effect on Colombia's political landscape. The deeply entrenched divisions between liberals and conservatives persisted into the 20th century, manifesting in continued violence, regionalism, and shifting governance structures. While Colombia had managed to retain its sovereignty despite internal strife, the path to a stable democracy remained fraught with obstacles. The next chapter will explore the continued struggles of the 20th century, including the rise of new political movements, the impact of industrialization, and the emergence of a modern Colombian identity shaped by the lessons of a century of civil war and political transformation. Chapter 7. The Lost Territory, Panama's Separation and Its Impact. As the dawn of the 20th century approached, Colombia stood at a crucial crossroads, reeling from the devastating effects of the Thousand Days War, 1899-1902. This bloody conflict between liberals and conservatives had left the country fractured, economically drained, and politically unstable. The wounds of the war were still raw when an even greater crisis struck, one that would reshape Colombia's geopolitical identity forever. The secession of Panama in 1903, facilitated by U.S. interests, was not just a territorial loss, but a profound national humiliation that would leave deep scars on the Colombian psyche. This chapter delves into the circumstances that led to Panama's separation, the internal and external forces at play, and the long-term consequences of this historic event on Colombia's political, economic, and diplomatic landscape. The strategic importance of Panama. For centuries, the Isthmus of Panama had been a crucial passageway connecting the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. During Spanish colonial rule, it served as a primary route for the transport of gold and goods between South America and Spain. After independence, the strategic significance of the Isthmus only grew, particularly as global maritime trade expanded. The idea of a canal cutting through Panama, drastically reducing travel time for ships, became an obsession for world powers, particularly the United States and France. In the mid-19th century, the construction of the Panama Railroad, 1855, underscored the isthmus's economic and military importance. However, despite its potential, Panama remained politically unstable, with a long history of regional autonomy and grievances against the central government in Bogota. Many Panamanians felt neglected by Colombian authorities, fueling separatist sentiments that external forces would later exploit. Colombia's weaknesses and the aftermath of war. Following the Thousand Days War, Colombia was in no position to resist external pressures or internal dissent. The war had devastated the economy, destroyed infrastructure, and left the government struggling to restore order. The liberal and conservative rivalry had weakened national unity, creating an environment where separatist movements could gain traction. The country was heavily indebted and lacked the military capability to defend its sovereignty over the isthmus. Meanwhile, the Colombian government had entered negotiations with the United States over the construction of a canal in Panama. The Hay-Herran Treaty, 1903, was signed, granting the U.S. permission to build and operate the canal in exchange for financial compensation. However, the Colombian Senate, wary of U.S. influence and the terms of the agreement, rejected the treaty, believing they could secure better terms. This decision proved to be a costly miscalculation. The U.S. role in Panama's secession. With the treaty rejected, the U.S. government, under President Theodore Roosevelt, sought alternative means to secure the canal. American business interests and strategic concerns dictated a swift resolution, and the U.S. administration began covertly supporting Panamanian separatists. On November 3, 1903, with U.S. encouragement and military presence ensuring Colombian forces could not intervene, Panama declared its independence. The speed and efficiency of the separation were remarkable. The U.S. Navy deployed warships to prevent Colombian troops from landing in Panama, effectively ensuring the success of the rebellion. Within days, the United States formally recognized Panama's independence, and a few weeks later, the new Panamanian government signed the Hay-Bunavarilla Treaty, 1903, granting the U.S. control over the Panama Canal Zone. Colombia's reaction, outrage and diplomacy. The loss of Panama was met with outrage across Colombia. Political leaders and the general public saw it as a betrayal, both by the United States and by the Panamanian separatists. Despite its anger, Colombia lacked the military strength to retake the territory and was diplomatically isolated. With U.S. backing, Panama was firmly beyond Colombia's reach. Over the next decade, Colombia sought diplomatic avenues to redress the situation. However, U.S. recognition of Panama and the rapid progress on the canal made the issue a fait accompli. It wasn't until 1921 that Colombia, under mounting international pressure and economic need, reluctantly signed the Thompson-Arrutia Treaty, formally recognizing Panama's independence in exchange for a $25 million indemnity from the United States. Though a meager consolation, it was an acknowledgement of the injustice Colombia had endured. The long-term consequences. The loss of Panama had far-reaching implications for Colombia. National identity and trauma. The separation of Panama became a symbol of Colombian national weakness and betrayal. It fueled resentment toward the United States and deepened internal divisions, as both conservatives and liberals blamed each other for the disaster. Economic reorientation. With Panama lost, Colombia had to shift its economic focus inward. The loss of revenues from potential canal operations forced the country to explore alternative trade and infrastructure projects. Diplomatic strategy. The event shaped Colombia's foreign policy for decades, making leaders wary of over-reliance on foreign powers. The country gradually worked to build stronger regional alliances to prevent similar interventions in the future. Political instability. The trauma of the separation contributed to further internal struggles, delaying Colombia's path to modernization and strengthening nationalist sentiments among political factions. Conclusion: a nation redefined. The separation of Panama was one of the most consequential events in Colombia's history. While the nation had endured wars and political strife before, the loss of such a vital region exposed its vulnerabilities to the world. The lessons learned from this period would go on to shape Colombia's strategies for governance, diplomacy, and national development in the decades that followed. As the 20th century progressed, Colombia would find itself at the crossroads of modernization, industrialization, and continued political struggles. The next chapter will explore the nation's journey through these challenges, detailing its economic transformation, emerging political movements, and the growing influence of global powers in shaping its destiny. Chapter 8. The Rise of Industry and the Working Class. As Colombia entered the 20th century, the loss of Panama was a stark reminder of its vulnerabilities on the global stage. However, the country did not remain stagnant in its sorrow. Instead, a new chapter began, one defined by industrial growth, urbanization, and the emergence of a working class that would play a crucial role in shaping the nation's future. This period was marked by economic expansion, the birth of labor movements, and the increasing influence of both local elites and foreign powers in Colombia's development. Economic transformation, from agrarian to industrial growth. Colombia's economy in the early 20th century was still largely agrarian, with coffee being the dominant export. Coffee production had been expanding since the 19th century, and by the 1920s, Colombia had established itself as one of the world's leading coffee exporters. The success of the coffee industry led to improvements in transportation infrastructure, including the construction of railways and roads that facilitated trade between the countryside and urban centers. Beyond coffee, Colombia saw the rise of banana plantations, particularly in the northern regions controlled by the United Fruit Company, UFC. This American corporation wielded significant economic and political power, leading to tensions between local workers and foreign business interests. The banana industry, while lucrative, became a flashpoint for labor disputes, culminating in the infamous Banana Massacre of 1928, when Colombian military forces, under pressure from the UFC and the U.S. government, violently suppressed striking workers in the town of Cienega. The expansion of textile manufacturing, oil extraction, and mining also contributed to the country's industrialization. The discovery of oil fields in regions like Barrancabermeja attracted foreign investment, particularly from American and British companies. However, these industries were often controlled by foreign interests, leading to growing nationalist sentiments and resentment among the working class, who saw their labor exploited while profits flowed overseas. The emergence of the working class and labor movements. The industrial boom in Colombia led to the rapid growth of cities such as Bogota, Medellin, Cali, and Barranquilla. Urbanization brought together a new demographic, the industrial working class, comprising rural migrants, artisans, and factory laborers. Living in overcrowded and often unsanitary conditions, workers began organizing for better wages, improved working conditions, and political representation. The 1920s and 1930s witnessed the rise of labor unions and socialist movements that challenged the dominant economic model. The General Confederation of Workers, CGT, and other union organizations staged strikes, demanding labor rights. The strikes were frequently met with brutal crackdowns by the government, which aligned itself with industrialists and foreign investors. The repression of labor movements, particularly after the Banana Massacre, fueled radicalization and set the stage for future political struggles. Political shifts, the rise of populism and reform movements. In response to mounting economic inequalities and labor unrest, new political movements emerged in Colombia. Leaders such as Jorge Eliécer Gaitán, a charismatic politician and advocate for social justice, championed the rights of the working class and the poor. Gaitán's speeches electrified crowds, calling for an end to oligarchic rule and foreign exploitation. His rise within the Liberal Party marked a turning point in Colombian politics, as he sought to bridge the gap between the elites and the working class. However, Gaitán's assassination in 1948 triggered nationwide violence known as El Bogotazo, an explosion of riots and unrest in Bogotá that marked the beginning of a broader period of conflict known as La Violencia. Nationalism and the role of the state in economic development. By the mid-20th century, Colombia's leaders recognized the need for a stronger national economy independent of foreign control. The government implemented policies to nationalize certain industries, regulate foreign companies, and promote domestic businesses. Infrastructure projects, such as hydroelectric plants and transportation networks, were expanded to support industrial growth. However, these efforts were often met with resistance from foreign investors and internal political factions. The tension between economic nationalism and global capitalism remained a defining issue as Colombia navigated the challenges of modernization while maintaining sovereignty over its natural resources. Conclusion: the foundations for future struggles. The rise of industry and the working class in Colombia was a double-edged sword. On one hand, economic growth led to modernization, improved infrastructure, and increased global influence. On the other hand, the widening gap between the elite and the working class, the repression of labor movements, and foreign economic domination created deep-seated grievances that would fuel future conflicts. As Colombia moved into the second half of the 20th century, these issues would become even more pronounced, giving rise to revolutionary movements, political instability, and the long-lasting internal conflicts that defined much of the country's modern history. In the next chapter, we will explore how these tensions culminated in one of the most violent and turbulent periods in Colombia's history, the rise of guerrilla warfare and the struggle for political and economic justice.